From the Civic Media Studios in Green Bay, this is Lean Local with Jim Schmidt, a weekly program focusing on local issues, prominent local candidates, political experts, and community leaders, helping to build better communities. This is Lean Local. And now, here's your host, former Green Bay Mayor Jim Schmidt.
All right, welcome everyone to another episode of Lean Local. This is the show where we do what we say. We talk about the local issues and on two fronts. One is we have our concerns and we're very interested in what's going on nationally and within the state, actually internationally, if you think about it, some of these wars and things. But and that's been pretty well covered by a lot of media outlets. And of course, in the state, we have a lot of things going on. But this show, Lean Local, we talk about what's going on locally, and we lean into the issues. The other thing that it was 20 years in politics, I was always a nonpartisan, and I just like that. I know it's all about issues to me, and whether you're Democrat, Republican, or independent, I just like the fact that we could talk about anything and everything. And I understand there's a lot of opinions on a lot of different issues, but on this show here, it's not left or right. It's just it's all about the local that's going on here. So I've mentioned this before when we were talking. Brown County, Greater Green Bay, actually the MSA, which is the Metropolitan Statistical Area, was chosen last year as the number one place to live in the United States. I mean, you think about that, 50 states, 350 million people. It's crazy that it's not crazy. It's awesome that we were picked the number one city. And when you read that article, if you kind of read, you know, a little bit deeper into it, they talk a lot about the cost. I mean, the biggest thing was really the cost of our money, right? Money goes pretty far here. You know, houses were pretty reasonable. Things were reasonable. But they talk a lot about the amenities. And I think what I read into that was they talk about the safety net in Green Bay, that this is a good place to live. I mean, it's a good place if you've got a great job and you're making money, because your money goes further. But it's also a great place if maybe you're struggling, or you have some concerns, some issues that not everyone has. That whole umbrella would fall under Health and Human Services. And it's like, yeah, you're right, it would. But who runs that? I mean, who's in charge of Health and Human Services? It's not like everybody knows the sheriff, the chief of police, county executive, the mayor. Health and Human Services, for those of you, is a huge, huge budget and a huge part of our county. And I've invited Eric Pritzel to join us today. Eric is the director. He is the top guy when it comes to Health and Human Services in Brown County. And we're going to talk about all the things he's responsible for and some of the things he's working on. But Eric, welcome.
Thank you.
You have been in this for a while.
Mm-hmm. Long time. My career in Health and Human Services goes back almost 30 years now. Started as a social worker many, many years ago in Columbia County, so down the southern part of the state. Mm-hmm. Then I worked in Dane County for a number of years, almost 10, and worked in Child Protective Services there too, as well as some other programs, serving kids with some mental health issues in institutions and getting them back to the community. And then I went to Columbia County as the director of Health and Human Services, so returned to where I started in terms of that professional career, and then Dodge County. I worked for the University of Madison running a child welfare training program. So for new professionals for a few years, so I did that. Great experience working in adult education and helping people jump into their careers and get started. So that was a lot of fun there. And then I came to Brown County in 2015. So I was here from 2015 through 2021. And then recently came back this year in February and returned to the job. So long career, doing different things, mostly child welfare in the background. You know, I've got a bachelor in social work, master's in social work from Madison, master's in business administration from Lakeland. So just really try to round myself out professionally, but also a lot of background in history and
wow,
Health and Human Services.
That's quite the resume. You don't look that old to me. I mean, you know, it's you've got a pretty good resume, an awesome resume. When you left, yeah, you left, and I know you went to really a neighboring community, mm-hmm, and then you came back, and I always think that's interesting. You tell me whatever you want, but I'm always interested why people came back to Green Bay, Brown County. And I asked many of our guests here, and many of them have left and came back, students, older people, police officers, everything else. Can you want to share anything with us?
Yeah, I kind of feel like life circles around this area of the state, too, because we had left, you know, my family and I, we'd been gone for 20 years. We came back and then worked here for almost 7 years in this role, and then had an opportunity to present itself in O'Connell to be the county administrator there, which is something that I always thought was interesting in terms of county government and structures. It was a tremendous opportunity. It was a great experience. Wonderful people in O'Connell County and the places. It's just a natural beauty up there. And then the opportunity presented itself to return to this role. And there's something about working in the community you live in, and I think that was part of the appeal. And I really enjoy working for the county executive. And County Executive Streckenbach is a wonderful person to work for. He's a great, great manager, great supervisor. So
that's awesome.
That was a good opportunity.
Yeah, I'm glad you're back here. Let's tell our listeners a little bit, Health and Human Services, that's kind of a catch-all. But, I mean, it's everything from aging and disability resources, veterans. What are some of the, and I'm going to drill into this later, but just give us an overall view of what you're responsible for.
Yeah, Health and Human Services just starts seeming so big and broad.
Right.
And it can be structured so many different ways in the state, too. So you'll see different places put this together differently. But here in Brown County, we have what would be your typical human service programs, like your income maintenance programs. So people think of assistance with food. So food share, badger care, so determining eligibility, administering benefits. We have our child protective services, youth justice, juvenile justice programs. So we have a behavioral health unit in the area as well. So we'll get into how that's structured in a minute physically. But we offer all the mental health and substance use services a clinic would offer. So we have that under our umbrella. We have our hospital, nursing home, and stabilization unit campus, the community treatment center, which is it makes us a little unique because we're just so broad in terms of what we offer. So we actually have a nursing home, inpatient psychiatric hospital, and a stabilization unit, which isn't locked, as part of our services under this umbrella. And then we have all of our public health programs too. So it ends up being very large. It's different places you might see different structures, like public health might be separate, a nursing home might be separate.
Right.
But here we just bundle it all together to try and get that continuity of service and recognizing that we all serve the same person. It's just different ways.
Right. And I think that it's important that people hear that. I also, you're a large, I don't want to say expense, a large piece of the budget, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, the budget for your department is larger than the whole budget for the city of Green Bay.
It is one of the largest budgets, if not the largest budget in the county.
Right. I mean, next to probably public safety, but I mean, it's, I don't even, so with that said, you know, what are the bigger public health challenges here in Brown County that you're seeing?
Specific to public health or, you know, in general with health and human services?
Let's talk about health and human services. Cause I have some questions, like I told you earlier, that I want to drill down into, but I'm just wondering you as the director, I mean, that's such an umbrella of services, you know, mm-hmm. from veterans, aging resource, you know, you were the guy that led what we did or what suggestions on COVID and, you know, like with all that, what do you as the director see as one of our biggest challenges?
So a couple of things I just want to make sure that we cover real quick. So like veterans and aging disability resource center are separated. Those are their own areas. They look like they're under the county in terms of health and human services. That's how it's packaged in the budget, but those are separate departments. The other thing I want to talk about is the budget in terms of the expenses and the revenues. And you always have to look at how much of this is actually money coming from the state and the federal government, which sometimes comes direct, sometimes passes through. So in terms of our budget, it is quite large. The amount of tax levy in that budget is not the largest in the county.
Oh, yeah, I know.
So that's something we always have to make sure we understand because we do so many things either are directly funded or we have to claim and get reimbursed. So there's a lot of work that goes into that.
Well, I think one of the reasons counties came into existence was the extension of the state.
We are arms of the state.
Right.
We can only do what the state authorizes us to do
right.
and tells us through action what we should be doing. And then ideally they will fund what we do. And I think that's where you get into some real differences of opinion in terms of how much funding we get in terms of what we do. But I think right now, probably our biggest challenges are around the mental health substance use area. I think that's a big issue. I think it's working with our community partners effectively to not always do the things that need to be done, but how do we make sure that people have the information to know what to do, provide the data that supports that. We have a lot of information that we collect. So I think we're always trying to figure out how can we be good community partners in that and identify those issues around mental health, substance use, accessing services. That's always a challenge. We have a lot of great services, but people sometimes either don't know or don't want to take advantage of those services. So it's always making sure people understand what they are. And then I think we're also trying to work in terms of that public health area. Right. Some of the same types of issues in terms of mental health and substance use being important in that area, but also trying to figure out how public health functions going forward too.
All right. I want to talk a little bit more about, I mean, you as the director, and I think we're just kind of learning just how big this department is and how effective it can be, but just some of your things for the vision for Brown County coming up. We're going to talk about that. And I've got a couple issues I want to drill down into. We're here on Lean Local with Eric Pritzel. He is the director of Health and Human Services for the county, a large department that encompasses many things. Is it fair to say you're the safety net of the county? Would you?
We do a lot of the safety net programs.
Yeah, you do.
But without our nonprofits, it's not going to work.
Exactly. All right. We're going to talk about that when we get back. We got another minute? Okay. All right. I thought he gave me, didn't it look like he gave you 1 minute and it was two?
I couldn't
see the guy? All right. Well, I want to talk a little bit about some of the programs you have. I want to talk about the whole fentanyl crisis and what do you have a program for that? How is that being addressed? Because that is a big, big problem in Brown County. All right. You give that some thought. We are going to listen to a little music. We're going to go to break. When we come back, we're going to talk about fentanyl. And then I do want to talk a little bit about homelessness as well. Of course, an area that I work in. So, all right, Eric Pritzel is here. Eric Pritzel is here with us, the Director of Health and Human Services for Brown County. We're going to be right back. Welcome back. You're listening to Lean Local with Jim Schmidt, our special in-house guest, Eric Pritzel, the Director of Health and Human Services for the County of Brown. Before we went to break, do you like that music? That music's from Suits. Have you seen that?
Mm-mm. No, I haven't.
That's awesome. When I first started here, the music was different. And then I watched Suits and I'm like, hey, can we change the music? They're like, yeah, they're so nice to me here. They let me talk to the people that I think are important to the community. And as long as it's local.
That fits in the tantrums, though, I think. Uh-huh. Fits in the tantrums, yeah.
Yeah, it does. When we were going to break fentanyl, and it's up in Brown County, and it's just, I don't want to put this on you, but mm-hmm. if you're the guy that educates and connects the dots, are you working on this?
Yes. Yes. So this is something that during that 2 years roughly that I was gone, there's a lot of work that was done in that space, which I'm still trying to understand kind of where we're going, where we've done some work already. But I know that there were listening sessions. I know that there were plans developed in terms of the settlements to put some more services in place. First, I think, was raising awareness. That was a huge lift that the public health area did, and they did an excellent job with it. Of just making sure people understood the dangers, the risks, the prevalence. So I saw a lot of those campaigns out there. We had public service announcements. We did mailers. I know I received one, so I saw it then. Just making sure people understood that this is really dangerous and one pill can kill. And just understanding that first. And then we also developed some in terms of the settlements that the county received too, there was some additional funds available to hire additional staff for services and to support some other services in the community. Like I said, we don't really do everything ourselves. We do a lot under contract or with nonprofits. So we have additional funds available for that. And that's something we need to get out there. So that's an effort that we need to get moving on, is supporting some of these sober living environments there in the community as well. Because that's important. You need those sober living environments. You need people with lived experience to participate in this. We need everybody to work together on this. I know the sheriff's office has a lot of funding that came through that too. So there's that side of things too. So you have to work on that angle as well as treatment, support, recovery.
Okay. The funding, so you're kind of telling me the funding's there.
There's some, yeah.
Okay. And yet, I mean, 200 people a day die of fentanyl in the United States. I mean, I when I think about that, I think if there was a plane crash of 200 people 3 days in a row, we would shut down the airline industry. And why isn't this getting the attention? Even here in Brown County, I think we had 13, I have the number here somewhere. And it's up over last year. And like you said, one pill can kill. Mm-hmm. We had a lady on here that her son died of fentanyl. And she doesn't want to be the face of fentanyl. And I don't blame her, right? She's got other stuff to do yet. And she went down to Madison and gave a talk. Can you appreciate that some people feel like not enough's being done?
Of course, yeah. I think with a lot of the things we do, people will consistently say there's not enough. And sometimes I don't think there's ever enough. I think there's no end to what you could do. So I understand that perspective. I think it's hard because we're not always very front-facing with what we're doing.
Right.
Of course, we do everything through actions at the county board level, and people see the plans that are developed and the plans that are passed. But it's not always there. Like, we don't go out and promote maybe as well as we could. And we're always worried about our capacity too. So if you promote, can you actually meet the demand that will come to you? I think that's always a challenge for us. But I think we haven't done a good job of probably promoting what we do have and do offer at our treatment center, for example.
And where is our fentanyl treatment center?
So we do not operate a specific fentanyl treatment center. We operate an outpatient substance use clinic as part of our services. There are other providers in the community that have opioid services as well. And the state's also coming out with additional funding, which they're putting money into this as well. So you're kind of seeing a multi-pronged approach to this. You've got local efforts, you've got law enforcement efforts, then you also have the state coming forward with some funding for medication-assisted treatment, mobile services. You'll see other things coming in the community to try and make everything possible to reduce the outcome of a fatal overdose.
Is there a community in the United States, like, I want to talk to you, like, we would go study other communities. What'd you do with your waterfront? You know, and I would go down there and look at it and just, okay, this is what would you have done different? Is there a community that you go that's got their arms around opioids, fentanyl, that, because it seems like, this is not a criticism. The United States, we spend a lot of money on after, not enough on preventative. I mean, with everything, with Megan, you name it. And how are we going to decrease the demand? Because it's all about money. That's all this whole fentanyl thing is. I've been to some of those meetings you talked about where they went up with this unbelievable flow chart of how fentanyl gets here. And I'm looking at that with these people, this distribution is growing. And I'm looking at that thinking, that's an awesome business plan. I mean, that is something that I'd give a student an A on that. Yet it works, but it works because of the demand, right? And it's hard to catch people because they really don't have kingpins like they used to do with like cocaine. That's at least what I learned in that seminar. But I want to get back to I have two questions for you. One is that, is there a community that has got their arms around it? Because I don't think we do. And I think most people would agree with me. The other thing is, what about the demand side?
So on the first question, I don't know what communities we have looked at to develop our plans. That's not something I've discussed internally yet. Now, perhaps something we can look into. I don't know if there's a community that's been more successful necessarily. And I think the other thing is we have seen some results from what we've done. We are seeing fatal overdoses decrease year over year. So we're seeing some things improve. Does that mean that there's any less use? You know, that's a whole different question than the fatal overdose question. So I think it's something we need to look into and see if there's other communities out there that have done some different things. I think we've been innovative. We're recognized in the state with our campaign to educate and engage the community. I think that was something I know they presented at the County Association Conference because everybody's looking at us saying, you're doing something really special up here. So I think there's a lot going on that people would look to us for, honestly. And I don't know that anybody's really depressed it to the point where you can say we've won. I don't know if that's really happened yet.
No.
On the demand side, you know, this is something we're starting to talk about is what's our next place to go? You know, why people use substances is a very complicated problem to pull apart. But I think what we're starting to look at is, are there things that we need to do to enhance people's general coping skills and things that come along in life, and how do you deal with that? And I think we want to make sure that both from a mental health as well as a physical health perspective, are we doing everything we can to avoid using certain substances as a way to address whatever that life situation is? So I think we're starting to talk about coping skills as an emphasis coming up, where if that can be brought out, that may be something that starts moving things too.
I think that's great that you kind of talk to the end user. I mean, for lack of better terms, I think they know, and to find out why the demand is there, I think that's great that you're going to be doing that. Hey, I got a couple of things I want to talk to you about. We're going to go to a quick break here. We are here with Jeff Pritzel, who is the Director of Health and Human Services for Brown County. We're going to be right back. You're listening to Lean Local with Jim Schmidt.
From the Civic Media Studios in Green Bay, this is Lean Local with Jim Schmidt, a weekly program focusing on local issues, prominent local candidates, political experts, and community leaders, helping to build better communities. This is Lean Local. And now, here's your host, former Green Bay Mayor Jim Schmidt.
All right, welcome back, everybody, to Lean Local, where we're here with the Director of Health and Human Services for Brown County, Eric Pritzel. I'm sorry I called you Jeff when we went to break. I don't know why I did that. So you like this music better because you're kind of jamming to this a little bit.
That was Starship.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
I like the first one too. I like Fits in the Tantrums. They're good.
Okay. You're our guest.
I like music.
Okay. I want to just make sure we're taking good care of you. We were talking about fentanyl, that it's an issue, and our police, when we bring them in, they talk about it, and I think we read about it. We've all been trained on Narcan, which, you know, and I have, most people have. It's at, in my desk at work, and I just, you know, like, I just want to get ahead of the curve, and I don't know what the answer is. I mean, if I knew, you know, I'd make a hell of a lot more money than I am here.
I think we all want to know what the answer is. The other thing, too, I would say about fentanyl that, you know, it's hard, is once we... And I do believe eventually we're going to get ahead of fentanyl. I think that will happen.
Really? I
do.
Eric, I take comfort in that.
I think, but in this is we've been through this with different substances. Now, we haven't seen anything as dangerous and as probably deadly and lethal as fentanyl. I think this has changed things radically in terms of that. But we've been dealing with substance use issues for a long time. So, you know, my concern is, are we going to see something else come forward? And then what's that something else look like? And then what's the way to counter that? And I think when we learn and develop strategies on one thing, we just have to be mindful that there's going to be something else that might emerge. Like you said, there's a lot of dollars involved in this different places. So I don't know what the replacement might be. I don't know what people are going to turn to in terms of trying to promote a substance. But this is something that we've been challenged with for a long time. And it starts with alcohol in some ways, too. We've got tremendous resources that we devote to alcohol treatment.
And it's still an issue.
Still an issue.
I remember, we got something, Kyle?
Yeah. So I'm understanding that, you know, this is a huge issue, yada, yada. There's just so much that goes into it. But, your job is a lot more about like the rehabilitation and like helping the people who are like, you know, victims of the drug, from what I'm understanding, right? And there's also a lot more that goes into it. But do you think that the drug issue is like a user issue, or like their situation they're in that's forcing them to use these drugs, or is it an availability issue?
I think it could be any of those things. I don't think it's any single issue like that. People, you know, we've seen it where people started using substances at a young age because of some trauma that happened. We've seen it where people maybe were injured and started using prescription. We've seen it where people have a family history and were exposed to a young age, and that continued. So I don't think there's any single answer, but it's a good point, Kyle, when you said, you know, we focus on the treatment aspect of it, and that's what we have a lot of resources devoted to. And then what's great about having Health and Human Services is you have a public health area that's focused on the how do we get in front of this from a prevention aspect, because they're always trying to figure out how do we engage people, engage the community, come up with strategies to try and counter whatever's happening as a public health emergency. So I think you've got two things happening at the same time. You've got the prevention promotion aspect, and then you've got the recovery treatment side in the department.
And my thing is, and I'm glad to hear you say that you think we're going to get ahead of it. I'm also glad that we're going to be spending more money on the prevention part of it, because that's right. I mean, and that's what we should be doing. I just want to tell you that a little example. It's not nearly as the danger of, well, maybe it is, as fentanyl. But, you know, when I was first elected, drunk driving was really high, like 2003, 2004. And so I went to the courthouse and I just got all the people that got DUIs and had them come to my office. I'm like, why'd you do that? And I'll tell you, I was shocked because I didn't know a lot about it, right? They're like, I said, what would we have done to have you stop it? They're like, you couldn't. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like I talked about checkpoints. I was going to put up pictures in the parking lots of car accidents and stuff. But you know, I mean, that's pretty deep when they look you right in the eye and say, there's nothing you could have done to stop me from drinking. You know what I mean? Like mm-hmm. That's scary.
That is really scary.
And this fentanyl is, but... Well, drunk driving kills a lot of people, but I'm just, this fentanyl, it's like, it's a lot of, some of this stuff is one and done. And I think the other thing with fentanyl, Eric, is it really doesn't know any segment of the population. I mean, it's.
It affects, I would say, all walks of life. I mean, every socioeconomic level, you see this affecting people all over. It's not isolated to any certain group.
And it's not just here in the hood.
It's prevalent.
And suburbs all over the place. And I, mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I'm really, I guess the best thing I'm getting out of this interview is that you think we're going to get ahead of it. I don't see it. Every article I read, it's worse. And then I know some people who are in the funeral business. It's like, it was really fentanyl, but they're not going to say it. And it's like, I just want to tell you, as a guy who lives here and loves this city, I don't feel it's getting better, but you're telling me it's going to.
I think what we'll see is, you know, what we're seeing already. We'll see that really, really significant outcomes start to decrease. I think we're going to see those harm reduction strategies start to increase. So is it going to stop use overall? Not sure. But I think you're going to see improvements in terms of that fatal outcome. I think that's what's going to improve. Because of some of the efforts that have been made both by local agencies and departments as well as by state funding and resources.
Is there anything, I was going to ask this at the end, but I want to ask it now because it's on my mind. Anything that citizens can do? I mean, we read about this and hear about this all the time. And, you know, we have elected people, but it just doesn't seem like funding's a real, real big issue to me.
There's a lot of money around the issue. I think it's always being able to one-on-one individually have the conversation, to not shy away from it, to be willing to engage with someone that you care about to say, here's what I'm wondering about. And just doing what you can. There's resources out there. Prepare yourself for that conversation. But I think it's, if you really are concerned, if you see something, you're concerned, start talking to somebody about it. Show them that you care, show them that you want to get them connected to something and that you're not blaming them for what they're doing. This doesn't make them weak or anything like that. You're just saying, I care about you. I want to help you. I want to figure this out with you. And I think it's just having the courage to start that conversation with somebody, which when we see things, sometimes we don't want to talk about. There's a lot of things we don't want to talk about. I think this is one where you just need to talk about it.
I've said this. You got to talk about it. Everything, you know, that in your marriage with your kids. I mean, if you don't talk about it, it's not going to get better. Which is, that's, at least that's been my experience. And yeah, you know, like there's some stuff we don't like talking about. We're going to go to another subject right now that, I can talk about, and I'm very comfortable talking about homelessness. I work at New Community Shelter. Love that place. Always have. When I was mayor, did the groundbreaking. They've been there 20 years now. And you know, my job is really more, community outreach. I raise money for them. I'm not one of the case managers, social workers like you are. But I see these people, right? I mean, I took them cherry picking. We're going to go to the county fair this week. You know, I'm not the activities director either. I just, these are real people that are, mm-hmm. These are good people. I mean, I'm telling you, these people, believe me, they want homelessness behind them. And there's a lot of reasons they're homeless. I would put that under the Health and Human Services homelessness. And when I look at your mission and why you exist, and to that end, what's happening in that arena?
So that's an issue that's really complicated for the department. We are not charged with serving people who are generally homeless. That's not something that we're either directed to do or given any sort of funding to do necessarily. So it's a really interesting area because we have an interest in it, but we're not really responsible for providing the service to people who are homeless as a basic need correction. So we're not able to provide just general housing to people or things like that. We administer benefits they may need, such as Badger Care, you know, medical assistance or food share. And we can provide mental health services and substance use services. We can provide a lot of those services. But that general concept of can we actually house them is something that we actually do not have any authority or funding to do. There's places in the county that have some housing authority, you know, has some money, for example, to develop some things. And there's a voucher program, of course, that they administer. Right. But our department, we're given money for substance use and mental health and outreach. We do quite a bit of outreach. We try to engage people and connect them to those nonprofit resources that exist while we're also trying to connect them to our resources because we want to see that person get the services they need to be successful. We can't always force them to engage in those services. And that's where it gets to be a really complicated engagement, legal, safety decision that I think is where we all struggle in that space.
Yeah. Okay. I think just that homelessness comes under a basic need. Okay. And I think, you know, more needs to be done in this community, period. I mean, I'm telling you, like I work in this, I think maybe a little bit more than you do, quite honestly, from what you just said. So you don't do housing. Does any county do housing out of the 72 we have here?
They will provide housing programs that are in statute or code, but they are not just going to generally provide housing to people.
Would you support an organization to help them build housing? Let's say, you know, us. Does the county do that? I'm just curious about, because we just, as we're sitting here, a homeless person walked by and you can say, well, how do you know they were homeless? Well, because of the backpack, the sleeping bag, you know, I mean, I pretty good guess. And, you know, I work down here. I'm down here a lot. And I'm just wondering, to turn to the county is something I think we should be able to do. And I think you're saying for services, we can.
For the adjacent services, you can. Because if somebody needs, again, mental health, substance use, benefits, you know, we can get them connected to those public benefits that may help create some stability with at least the medical side, potentially food side. But that basic housing assistance concept it's going to come through either programs like a voucher program or some other place like that. But that's pretty much the limit. That's not even in our department. So we really, that's just an area that is a gap. I would say that's a gap area.
I like that. I would agree with you on that. I think it's a gap area. And I think people want that addressed. I just don't know. I mean, we're doing our part and I think some other people are trying to do theirs, but it's, you know, there's this article in the paper. I brought it here, but I mean, it's growing. There's more homelessness. And some people are like, how can that be? You know, the unemployment's down. But there's much more to it than that. And, like, I know you're rolling your eyes. But
I'm not rolling my eyes. I'm just like, yeah, they can say those things. And I think, you know, like your experience has shown you that there's a lot of reasons people end up in that service area. It's not simple. It's not like people are just choosing that life necessarily.
No, and it is. It's complicated. And I'll tell you what I've learned, and I want to move on after this, but, you know, I say if you have some apprehensions about something or anything, get to know it, you know, and this is the real deal. These people, they're trying. When they come to see us, though, it's like they have got to want to leave homelessness behind them. We're not like, come here and sleep for a while, get something to eat, and then go chill. That's not our program. Our program is, look, if you've been doing this for 12 years, 18 years, or whatever, I don't care if it's 6 months, you want that program behind you, you can come here. It's just that I think funding becomes an issue, and I don't know, maybe I can talk to you off air about that, but just I understand you don't want to get into housing, but we do, and we just need some help, and I don't know.
Yeah, and I think that's one of our challenges and something that I've talked about at different points is we can provide a lot of great services. We have really committed, passionate staff that provide all these great things, but somebody's basic need is not taken care of, which is that housing piece and that sheltering. And there's people maybe that don't want that. And I understand that, and we have to respect that. But when we do have somebody who's presenting and saying, I need this, this, and this, and that basic need is really that barrier, well, how good are the services I'm providing? How effective are they going to be? You know, again, great service, but basic need.
It is. Hey, can you stick around? Just a couple more questions, but I want you to think about, you know, what your vision is for the Department of Health and Human Services for the next 5 years, what we can look to. You're doing a great job. I just want to know where we're going with the department, okay? We'll talk about that when we get back. We'll be right back. This is Jim Schmidt, Eric Pritzel, Lean Local. Welcome back. This is Lean Local with Jim Schmidt, and we have a very special guest in studio, Eric Pritzel, who runs the Health and Human Service Department for the county. And, you know, everybody knows the chief of police and the fire chief and the mayor and the county executive. And this Health and Human Services, Eric was just explaining to us, this is a big deal. I mean, this is the safety net, or your mission statement, I have that here. And it's protective services. There's so much in your mission statement. Have you thought, and you know, not that I ever give this any, I like elected officials because I think they're held pretty accountable in this community. And when you go to the grocery store or church, or people will remind you of something you said, or why aren't you doing this? Have you thought about your position being elected? Have you talked about that? Are there other elected Health and Human Services? And I just want to, before you answer, two reasons. The accountability, which that's not an issue here, but it's the visibility. I mean, if you're elected, like we elect our county clerk, we elect our treasurer. Yeah. Some of those jobs I think should be appointed, quite honestly. But I just think there's so much in your umbrella. I mean, I care deeply about fentanyl and homelessness, and I know you, but I don't think everybody can get to talk to you or knows how hard you're working. And do you think about that? Or is that something we should lobby the county board or state? I don't even know who would call that shot.
So it would be a state change because by statute, the position is either appointed by the local governing body, which would be a county board, human services board would be involved in that, or it can be under an administrator or executive structure. It's appointed by one of those officials. So it has to be actually statutory change to make that change. I think there are some places in the country where they do elect the position. I think that does happen. I can't remember off the top of my head which ones they are, but you do see that from time to time. But here in Wisconsin, it is by statute an appointed and confirmed position through the board process.
You didn't answer my question.
Asked me what needed to change.
Well, I did. Okay, you're right. I did. That's what I did ask. You know, as us hosts, we always try
What do I think?
Yeah, I'd like to. I'm going to move on right after this. But
you know, I don't know if I would want it to be a politically active position that way. I like the visibility issue you're raising, because I think that's important. Is how we talk and do things that people don't want to know happen in many cases don't want to talk about. So I think getting that forward of talking about child abuse and neglect, talking about youth justice services, talking about adult protective services for that matter, that's a huge area that we're really not talking about a lot. So I think, would it change the conversation? Would it bring it forward in the community? Potentially, yeah.
Well, let's compromise and just get you back on Lean Local again. How's that?
We can talk about a lot of things.
And I want to do that because we're going to get close to wrapping up here. When we went to break, your vision, I mean, you're going to be here for a while, you're a young guy. The next 5 years, how do you see this department growing, or your priorities, your focus?
I think that it always depends what happens at the state level, too. So there's local decisions and local priorities that get developed, and we're looking at those. But we also have to look at what happens at that state level. So an example, in the next few years, we are going to have to continue to meet the need of children with long-term support needs. So those are physical, developmental, intellectual disabilities. That program has expanded exponentially in the past few years because the state said no waiting list for service. So we're meeting that need, but we're having to scale up and add staff every single year. And that—
Tell me a little bit, explain a little bit more. Is this the Sybil Hopkins that we've had for years, one of the best places in the state?
No, that's a tremendous asset in this community too. No, this is the community services aspect of it, where we provide all these services in communities. It can be any support a child would need that is eligible for the funding. But there was a time where there's a wait list because those funds were either capped at the state level or locally you'd run out of money to match the federal funds. So the state in the past couple of years has said no more wait lists. We're going to open that up for people. You can be 100% funded. So we have been adding staff every single year for probably the past 3 to 4 years at a pretty high rate now. So our enrollments, they're probably going to get close to 1600 pretty soon. And we were half that a few years ago. So that's how many kids that were, it's really amazing because it's how many kids were waiting for service that weren't getting served. And then there's also new kids that come forward too.
Well, tell me, I should know this, but I don't. What kind of services are we talking about?
So these can be in-home services, so they could be adaptive aids in their home, could be things like you might see physical changes like ramps, might also be equipment so that a child can fully participate in the community and school and other recreational activities.
That's awesome. Yeah. We should be doing that, right? There shouldn't be a waiting list.
And this is
that.
A great example where the state said, you know, we're done with this wait list concept. We need to get these kids served. And I think it's helped not just that area, but it's helped in our other areas of the department where child welfare was thinking, how do I meet the needs of this child? Because now they came in that child welfare system side. Now we can connect them to children's long-term support and get those services. So I think in the next few years, we're going to continue to scale that up. And then we also have to work on that coordination within the department. That's going to be a huge area.
Right. Tell me a little bit about, I mean, you run the department, whatever did I say, $115, $130 million. Tell me about the technology upgrades, things that you're, are you guys keeping pace with that? It's such a social service industry, and you know, not handholding, but tell me, are we doing something on that side? I'm just curious. What I always ask people in their departments what they're doing from a technological standpoint,
so like internally and what we're using.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, we work with a lot of state systems, but we also have our own electronic health record. So basically, we operate a small scale health system between our behavioral health and our inpatient outpatient services. So we've got a very robust electronic health system that we work with. We've got all the data that can be produced with that. We work with the state systems. Those are, I would say they go through refreshes every couple of years.
Yeah.
Some of those you ask for, some of those you don't. so then you have to learn to work with those too. But we're keeping up, and we've made investments in that electronic health record system.
Because there's that, we're going to wrap up in just a minute. Some person listening wants to be Eric Pritzel when they grow up. They want to lean into health and human services. They want to direct a small community. Advice?
Advice? Oh, wow. I think you have to know, you have to be connected and passionate about helping people and serving people. I think you have to start somewhere in the services, you know, whether it's serving in a homeless serving institution or shelter, or whether it's working for a county department. But I think you have to know something, and I think it's good to have that exposure. I think it's always good to just get that background.
And where'd you go, what are your degrees in school? Just where'd you get your degree in?
Social work.
Okay.
Bachelor's, master's.
All right. And
business administration was the last one.
Okay, I was going to say, and good communication skills too.
Good communication skills, yeah.
You've got that.
But I think it has to start with caring and concern.
All right. Hey, we're out of time. Thanks for listening. This is Lean Local with Jim Schmidt, our special guest. I just want to thank you again, Eric. Eric Pritzel, who is the Director of Health and Human Services and really the safety net for our whole county here. Eric, thanks for coming in, and continue the good work.
Thanks for having me on. All right, appreciate it.